In the devotee, all the good qualities of Krishna will manifest. This is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it is an interesting point. Bhagavatam says, yes, yes, dear Bhagavatir, kinchana sarvirgunaistatasamasatiharasa kuto mahatguna. It said all the good qualities of the demigods will manifest in living being. But Chaitanya Charitamrita says all the good qualities of Krishna will automatically manifest within the devotee. Not to the same extent, but to a percentage. Krishna is omniscient. He is omnipotent, Krishna. Prabhupada said, I'm not omniscient. I don't know everything that goes on. So that may not be possible, but the same qualities of Krishna. So that is natural, because the devotee is the servant of Krishna. And therefore the devotee serves the qualities of Krishna. Whatever is dear to Krishna is dear to a devotee. They are very close in that way, very close. The same modes. Of course, Krishna has so many apparently contradicting qualities also in his nature. Sometimes Krishna is very soft and gentle, and sometimes he's also very strong. So, but all these qualities, they gain goodness when they are applied properly. Just like anger, by some may be considered a negative quality, but when Lord Nrisimhadev was getting angry, it was very good. At that time, well, Lord Nrisimhadev was the manifestation of the Lord's anger. Prahlad, 5 years old, being totally devoted to the Supreme Lord, totally helpless physically, and his father was eager to kill him, and it didn't work. He tried various things. He arranged for it. He said, boil the boy in hot oil. Somehow or other, it didn't work. Then he said, pierce him by lances and sharp weapons. But all those lances bounced off the body of Prahlad and hurt the people who were trying to pierce him. Throw him off a cliff. And it was as if he landed on a pile of cotton. Nothing seemed to work. Then little Prahlad, after having survived it all, stood in front of his father, who said, where are you getting your strength? He said, from the same source where you are getting yours, father. Oh, the Supreme Lord. No, not from mommy. From the Supreme Lord. Wrong one. It was a good entrance on stage. Anyway, then, from the Supreme Lord. And then, Hiranyakasipu asked, so, where is that Supreme Lord? Is he here? Is he there? Is he anywhere? Is he in this? He's everywhere, Father. Oh, everywhere he is, huh? So, if he's everywhere, then he's in this pillar as well? Yeah, he's there. No, yeah, no worries. All right. Smash that pillar. And Hiranyakasipu got the darshan of a special feature of the Lord, who he could not recognize as the Supreme Lord. Even Lakshmi Devi could not recognize that form as the Supreme Lord, because no one had ever seen such a form before. But I like to sort of emphasize that here was Lord Nrisimhadev with Vajradhanaka and Danta, which nails and teeth like thunderbolts, and with manes and so on, and appearing like a terrible, fearsome lion. And at the same time, that Lord Nrisimhadev who later on ripped Hiranyakasipu apart and ripped his intestines out of his abdomen, and then hung the bloody intestines around his neck. That Lord Srimadev is the manifestation of the soft-heartedness of the Lord. I just wanted to emphasize that. Because he was a manifestation of anger out of soft-heartedness, out of caring for Prahlad. And, I mean, we could also turn extremely angry if some great injustice is done in front of us. We can also turn into imitations of Nisrita. It's possible. One can imagine that, even a very peaceful person. So in this way, we can see that this is an example of how qualities in itself cannot be glorified or condemned. It depends how they are applied. There is a time and place for anger. There is a time and place for soft-spoken words. There is a time and place to scream. And obviously, if someone is about to walk under a car and you go, watch out, that will not be very much appreciated, you know. Oh, he spoke so soft and so politely. Watch out, please, you know. Watch out, idiot! That will be much more appropriate and appreciated. So, in this way, we can look at qualities according to the situations. So the Lord has many qualities, and as I said, some appear contradictory. But they are not. They are just meant to be applied in different situations. The good qualities of Krishna are undoubtedly that Krishna is not self-centered. Krishna is rather sadanam ridiyam mayam. That Krishna, he is always thinking of his devotee. He's not thinking of himself. Although we see a description how Krishna in Dwarka starts meditation every day and how he meditates on himself. But what else can he do? Because you're supposed to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he couldn't really meditate on anyone else, because he happens to be the only Supreme Personality of Godhead. What to do? So he's forced to meditate on himself, but it wasn't in a spirit of self-indulgence. Not like narcissistic or something, oh, look at me, I am so wonderful. Although Krishna certainly was amazed when he saw his own reflection in the onyx floor in Dwarka, and he saw such beauty that he was amazed, right? Just amazed. He said, like, God, look at this astounding beauty. Still, Krishna was not self-indulgent. That was not. Krishna was just innocently appreciating the beauty, because he is extraordinarily beautiful, stunning. It cuts the breath if one just perceives. So that is there. But Krishna was never proud. Krishna somehow or other remains humble. That is a very interesting quality. How the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not proud. Although he has reason to be proud. I mean, we don't really have. It's like Prabhupada used to say, a pauper is proud of his penny. And saying, like, here we are, you know, what do we have? We have nothing, and still we're trotting around, like, look at me. But Krishna, he has all the reason to be proud. And yet, he's humble. Oh. So Supreme Lord is humble. He's not in any way carried away by his own qualities. That is his amazing feature. And what Krishna really appreciates is rather to see the love of his devotees. And that is his only interest. Krishna is known as Kamadev. Kamadev means Cupid. But not the ordinary Cupid. When we read about Cupid, the demigod, the Deva Cupid, then we see that at one point Lord Brahma created from his body this personality appeared, Cupid. And suddenly the whole universe got messed up. Everyone just suddenly, his eye fell on someone else like it had never happened before. Right? And even Brahma himself got in trouble with his daughter, because at the time there was not really much else around, you know, we should understand. But anyway, and that got so bad that even when some of the sages who were his sons said, no, come on, please, you know, I mean, stop this now. He didn't want to. So Cupid's influence is tremendous, tremendous. But when Krishna is described as a transcendental Cupid, it is different in that Krishna is not awakening mundane lust like the demigod Cupid, but Krishna is awakening love. And he makes so many arrangements to incite that love, to fan that love, to sort of increase that love, and that's his business. That's what he does. Anyway, he sends us hurricanes, and he sends us floods, and he sends us earthquakes, and he sends us volcanoes and so many things. And that's all to increase our love. He sends us rakshasas, all these things he sends us. Is that then to increase our love? Yeah, well, sometimes first he has to take out some weeds, right? Before the bhakti lata can sprout, before the creeper of love can grow. So sometimes when Krishna smashes us a little bit, okay, that's simply, he's weeding the garden. That's it. C.S. Lewis, a Christian writer, who is a really good writer, came up with this model of, he said that his life was like a house, and God had entered into that house, and he was doing some reconstruction on the house. And well, that was to be expected, because there were some qualities that he really had to change in his life. He knew that. He knew he had to work on himself. So when God went to work and started to break down some things in the house, it was okay. But as of late, what is he doing? I mean, for God's sake, what's he doing? He's breaking the whole house. I mean, he's smashing it to pieces left and right. This is not longer a modification. I mean, is there anything going to be left? Yes. Yes, God is not only building a house for us to live in, we thought a nice little cottage, you know, and so on. No, he's trying to build a palace. And he's planning to move into it himself. C.S. Lewis in sort of free form presented. But it's interesting. It's very interesting how Krishna is at work. And this is the one quality that really is maybe the most wonderful quality in Krishna. If I go over all Krishna's qualities, then the quality that he's trying to increase the love in every living being, whether in the material world or whether in the spiritual world, that is the most amazing thing, and that he's doing it in a playful way. In a playful way, very expertly. So that's even more exciting. So many playful arrangements in Krishna's pastimes. Think of Lord Brahma, who thinks, these residents of Vrindavan, no, really, listen to this, There is a boy in the village, right, and he is extraordinary. I mean, we have to hand the boy that. He does something, he even lifted a hill, no, really, a whole hill, right, on his little finger. Not a small feat for a boy, I dare say that is certainly impressive. Of course, we should see things in perspective, right? And me, Brahma, the creator, I'm holding planetary systems in place, you see the point. Hill, planetary systems. you're getting the point or what, maybe I should just teach them all a lesson. And Lord Brahma decided, I'll steal the boys, I'll steal his friends and calves as he's in the forest suddenly, and we'll see how he's totally bewildered, where they suddenly could have gone, right? And so it happened. And Lord Brahma stole the calves and coward boys and placed them in a cave, and by some mystic power he put them in a slumber, and then went back to see the fun. And the fun was that the calves and coward boys were back. They're back. They're still, what's this? Did he just take them out of the cave? He went to the cave. No, they were still in the cave. Came back, but they're here. But are they here in the cave? And Lord Brahma just stood there, totally confused for a moment. And then all these forms took the four-armed forms. All the calves and coward boys changed into four-armed forms of Narayan. Then Lord Brahma could count 1, 2, 3, 4 arms, chaturbhuj, cha, bhagavan, 4 arms, bhagavan, yes, very clear, that is the Lord. So Lord Brahma then realized, oops, I blew it. I just messed with the Supreme Lord. So then he offered prayers. But these prayers were very smart prayers, because he was glorifying him in different ways, and then he came to the point. He said, of course, my dear Lord, I appeared on a lotus flower. And actually, I did not appear from any other father or mother than from you. Therefore, you're both my father and my mother. And a mother doesn't really take any offense whatever the children do, even when a child sometimes passes stool or urine on the lap of the mother will just overlook that and just do the needful, and it's not a big deal. He tried like that. So these were not exactly prayers, but although they are recorded as Lord Brahma's prayers, but if you read them carefully, you go, and he mixed in some manipulative words in his prayers. Anyway, the whole thing, as it was going on, was done in such a playful way. Think of Kaliya. Kaliya is a big snake, a big one, with many hoots and so on. The nasty type, extremely poisonous. So, and Kaliya was there on Ramanaka Island, and that was a place, an island of snakes. So it happened to be so that Garuda, the bird carrier of Lord Vishnu, eats snakes. So when Garuda came to that place, he said, this is paradise, look at that. So Garuda was eating snakes left and right, and therefore the snakes made a deal with Garuda that they would make one offering every so many times, and Garuda would come, take that offering, and that was it. He wouldn't just eat anyone and everyone. But then one time the powerful king Kaliya said, why would I make offerings to that bird, you know? Who does he think he is? I'll fix him up. So he was ready to take him on, but it didn't go very well, and he had to run for his life, which he did. And he happened to know that once, long, long ago, Garuda had been cursed while he was in Vrindavan by Subari Muni, because Garuda ate a big fish. He eats fish as well. And Subari was meditating on the water and had been there for 10,000 years and got attached to the fish. See, even while meditating on the water for such a long time, attached to fish. And then the result was, when his fish was eaten by Garuda, he cursed Garuda. If he would ever come back to Vrindavan, he would die. It's a heavy curse. Not the dying part, but never coming back to Vrindavan. Anyway, so Garuda, he wouldn't come to Vrindavan. So that's where Kaliya went into hiding. And then the whole thing, you know, like, okay, Krishna, when he heard that this poisonous snake was there and so on, and his calves and cowherd boy friends, he left them alone for a moment looking for a missed calf. And the next thing, his cowherd boy friends and all the calves drink the water and they're dead. And Krishna comes and he finds all his friends dead. Anyway, he revives them and they're all there like, we were dead. I mean, if you were dead and you just sort of come back to life, you sort of, it's not like, oh, we're back alive. They're like, we were dead, and now we're back alive. Next moment, Krishna climbs in a kadamba tree, jumps off the branch, jumps into the Yamuna, and the water of the Yamuna rises with one foot. And then Krishna begins to play with both hands and makes musical sounds, you know, like that kind of thing, and to sort of indicate what was coming, dancing on the hoots of Kaliya. And he danced and danced and danced on those hoots of Kaliya, and at one point, the residents of Vrindavan, they just couldn't handle it anymore. They were, it was just going on and on and on, and they were at the point of snapping. And at one point, they just couldn't register it anymore mentally. So they couldn't see it anymore. At that point, Krishna even had a rasa dance with the gopis on the hoots of Kaliya. And that went on for a long time, and then all the other stuta are just frozen, not seeing. And then finally, the snake was getting tired and started coughing blood. And that's when it looked like Kaliya was finished. Just then, of all things, the ladies come, you know. The ladies come, and they're all crying, they're all crying, and they go like, oh, Krishna, please don't kill our husband. Krishna goes, oh, God, here we go, oh, no, what do we do now? Anyway, Krishna then, you know, to pacify him, said, okay, I won't kill him. Right. All right. Okay, ladies, quiet, and so on. But then the situation arose that Krishna asked Kaliya to leave. And of course, Krishna did that very nicely. If I would have done it, you know, I know what I would have said. I would have said, now listen, you snake. This town ain't big enough for the two of you. And I'm telling you, snake, you better be out of town before high noon. You got it, you know. And now I tell you one thing, snake, and I would pull my two six shooters out, you know what I'm saying? And now you dance, you know, now you dance, bang, 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 you dance. Yeah. And that snake, you know, would have danced all the way, I tell you. And then at a safe distance, safe from the bullets, he would have turned around and shaking his fist and said, Swami, I get you back. Krishna's more intelligent. than a swan. I can't say. Krishna has a different way to deal with these things. Krishna says, my dear king of the snakes. Kaliya goes, oh, he knows that I'm the king. Now that you've been touched by my lotus feet, you've been purified. And now you can return to your kingdom of Ramananka, which is nowadays Fiji, and you can stay there and rule there on my behalf. And don't worry about Garuda, because I left my footprints on your boots, so Garuda will never touch you. So you can return and take up your royal position once again. Oh, see, in this way, he got rid of Kaliya in a very expert way. And that is Krishna, right? Krishna, he purifies, he increases, he purifies everyone from impurities, from the obstacles that get in between. And there are many obstacles in the consciousness of the conditioned souls. And Krishna removes these obstacles somehow or other by various arrangements. And then awakens a love for him and engages his devotee in service. And in this way, in so many playful ways, sometimes dancing, sometimes taking the place of calves and all this. And this amazing feature in Krishna, that he's in a playful way purifying all the living beings and trying to increase their love. That is amazing. That is amazing. And the purity is eternally growing. And even in the spiritual world, one is already pure, but one becomes still more pure because one's love for Krishna is increasing eternally. That is Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 4, where it says that Srimati Radharani, she loves every quality of Krishna. It's not she loves some qualities of Krishna and some she don't. She doesn't. No, she loves every aspect of Krishna. And Krishna has unlimited qualities. And whenever she finds out a new quality of Krishna, she loves that also. And in this way, her love is eternally increasing. And this is amazing. That is what love is really all about. Eternally increasing. Not like, I love you to death for the last 50 years and it's been the same old thing. Yeah. And so of course I love you too much, but I'm bored stiff and sick. No, it's rather totally, I'm giving it straight talk, you know. Dutch, straight in the face. No beating around the bush. Anyway, so the point is that when she discovers another quality of Krishna, she loves that quality also. And the same thing is happening to us. We're also on that path. This is the spiritual path. This is where it begins, the bhakti mark, the path of bhakti, the path of devotional service. This path of devotional service is the discovery of who Krishna is. It is the discovery of who Krishna is. And embracing his amazing qualities and just deeply falling in love with Krishna, deeply, with all his amazing qualities. And I think the fact that Krishna is trying to increase that love, that is the quality that amazes me the most and attracts me the most. And then Sarva Mahaguna Gan Vaishnava Sarir and all the great qualities in Krishna, they also awaken in the devotee. Because the devotee cannot be satisfied. I'm just sitting here happily with my Krishna consciousness and my Krishna and my prasadam and my deities and my kirtan and my bhajans and my fun and my transcendental temple and my transcendental friends in my own transcendental house. Even my cat eats basalam. And like everything is totally transcendental and it's so sweet and so nice. No, a devotee cannot be satisfied with that. At one point, that gets dry. And then what awakens is that same quality that Krishna has, that quality to somehow or other awaken love of God in others. And Lord Chaitanya would go around the neighborhood and sing, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chanda Bole, Kotra Nidra Jaya Maya, Pisachira Kode, Pisachira, a witch. You have for so long been sleeping on the lap of the witch Maya. Now wake up. Wake up. Wake up, sleeping soul. So, and this, when this quality awakens in a devotee, this quality where the devotee just desires to awaken love for Krishna in others, then the love in the heart of that devotee increases so many times, because that devotee will see that actually Krishna has a deep loving relationship with every single living entity, every single living being. And then to be part of that, to somehow or other awaken counter-love in all these living beings, what can be more pleasing to Krishna than that? And therefore, the love in the heart of the devotee is increasing so much. So, that's most amazing. Most amazing. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that one pure devotee has the power to deliver the entire universe. Such a statement would have remained theoretical. But when we think of Srila Prabhupada, it becomes completely realistic. It becomes completely something we say, he could do it. He can do it. Undoubtedly, he's already doing it. I always think that we hear about UFOs. Have you heard about them? About little gray men and green ones also. The grays and the greens. You've heard of them? The reptilians. You heard about them?
David Icke.
Cold wind. Anyway, cold wind from the mouth of David. Now we've heard about them. Well, I'm sure that as we have heard about them, they've heard about us. I'm very sure that some of these extraterrestrials have heard the holy name. You know, it's not possible. I mean, they've got high tech, you know. And I'm very sure, that they've picked up the kirtan. And therefore, I'm quite sure that in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan fleet, there are UFOs. Believe it or not. It's entirely up to the individual, but I'm quite sure. If you doubt it, okay, you know, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, no doubt about it. And in so many other ways, once Malati, who is like so close to Prabhupada from the very early days, she said she had this dream. And in this dream, she was glorifying Prabhupada. And then these celestial beings came. And they said, you don't know anything about the glories of Prabhupada. They said the whole universe is glorifying Prabhupada. And she said, who are you? They said, we are Yamadutas. He said, you don't look like Yamadutas. Yamadutas, they look very ugly and like, you know, and threatening. You look very beautiful and celestial. They said, no, our original form is very beautiful and celestial. Only sinful people see us as very ugly and threatening. Anyway, but they told her that the whole universe is worshipping Prabhupada. Said, you don't know who Prabhupada is. Anyway, she told that one year in Mayapur, and it was a dream, but quite a dream, and quite a personality to be dreaming, a close associate. And yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. Of course, you may doubt, and I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, but I wouldn't doubt it. I think that Prabhupada is greater than what we can conceive in our dreams. I think it even goes beyond that dream, Prabhupada's greatness. Who can understand the power of one pure devotee? No, who can understand? Who is filled with so much love, for Krishna, and so much love for all living beings. It's not, I love God and I don't love anybody else. You know, I love God so much, you won't believe it. Ooh, I love him all the time. And deep, you know, very deep and very strong. But, you know, get out of my way. Can't you see I'm busy loving God here? What are you all doing here, you know? Wasting my time, lack of time spent with loving God. No, we see that these great, great devotees, they love God. And they love how all these living beings are also part of him. Srila Prabhupada would say, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti mata vajantamam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Which is a verse from the Bhagavad Gita which says, I'm the original of all the spiritual and material worlds. The wise who know this, they worship me with love. And then Srila Prabhupada says, yes. He said, just if you love body, you love finger also. Mm-hmm. If you love body, you love fingers. Yes, logical. And so Prabhupada says, therefore if you love Krishna, you also love his creation. You love his creation. That is amazing. Then you love every living being. Suridam Sarvadeinam, it says. Krishna is Suridam Sarvadeinam. He's the friend of all living beings. But even beyond that, you love the whole creation. Everything. Because you see everything in connection with Krishna. So in this way, Krishna consciousness offers so many solutions. It offers solutions for all the division between creatures in this world. It also offer solutions, ecological solutions, because we even love the creation. So then, love means automatically that one is respectful. Someone or something that we love, we treat with respect. If I couldn't give a fake, you know, microphone, but I love this microphone. So I'll keep on talking into it for hours and hours and hours. Because we have an intimate, loving relationship. So, love is changing our attitude. And the first basis is respect. A natural respect. Where there's love, there's respect. Where there's no love, there's no respect. So, in this way, to awaken love is the only way. We can never convince the world. I was on stage in America. I went into this club and they gave me a little fluorescent stamp on my hand. The ones when we were teenagers, if you were quick before the ink was dry, you could put it on the hand of a friend and then one didn't have to pay. You know that one, right? So it was one of those, And we're going into this club, and I'm the oldest one. And I noticed that not only was I the oldest one, I was the only one who didn't have earplugs. And I just saw everyone had earplugs. And so I was like, what's going to happen here? I don't have earplugs. So anyway, I just made some tissues, you know, and just like rolled them into a long point and put it as deep into, wedged it as deep into my ears as I could, right? And then it started. I was there for a Shelter Straight Edge concert, and it was loud, you know. It started like that. That was the warm up. They didn't get the full's pace immediately. A slow start, you know? Anyway, it started like that, and then all the people in front of the stage started slam dancing. And I was in the middle of that, so it wasn't that good. You know, I mean, I'm not that good at slam dancing. So anyway, they asked me to come on the stage, and I stood in front of a big speaker, and my cloth was flapping in the sound. That's how loud it was. And then Shelter was singing this song, "We've Got a Better Way." We've got a better way. And then suddenly, after doing that three times, it stopped, dead silent. And then someone would go, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." And then again, "We've got a better way." Boom, boom, boom. This is a way to get a point across. Nice preaching. And an attempt to convince. But just convincing is not enough. Well, somehow or other, we have to conquer with love. There's no other way. Prabhupada conquered with love, right? Prabhupada conquered by cooking an incredible feast every Sunday. I mean, Prabhupada conquered by keeping a jar with gulab jamuns in the temple. Permanent day, and when it was empty, he would fill it up again. And I want to know why this practice has been stopped in ISKCON. And I think that every temple should again reintroduce this. I think it's absolutely important. Yes. And then, you know, Prabhupada again and again conquered with love. When there was one shower, Prabhupada would stand in the line. He didn't go up front and everyone would have stepped aside. No, he just humbly stood in the line. Everyone got up. No one ever thought, who's going to clean up here after we've eaten and after we've made a huge mess? Nobody thought about it. It was Prabhupada. And he never complained. He never said, "God, I always have to be the one who wants to do it." He conquered totally with love and made people so indebted. Satsarup Maharaj, who was still Steve, he was one of the few devotees who had a job. Him and Brahmananda, they had a job. All the others in the first temple, they didn't have jobs, so they were hanging around all day. So one day Prabhupada said to Steve, "Oh, you can come tomorrow in the day, we have this lecture." And Steve said, "No, I cannot come because I have to work." Prabhupada said, "Oh, you have a job." And it was appreciated. But then, at lunchtime, he would quickly sneak out, go to the temple, and get prasadam. Then one day, his boss was insisting that he would work overtime. You know, like, an amazing what to do, I'm going to miss prasadam. And the boss was like, he wouldn't bend. So I think, who to call? Who can I call to ask to save me a plate of prasadam? He couldn't think of one devotee who could save him a plate of prasadam. So I think the only one who could do it is Swamiji. So somehow or other he called Swamiji. Hello, Swamiji, yes, that's Hare Krishna. Swamiji, I have to work overtime today. I cannot come for the lunch. Could you save me a plate of prasad? Prabhupada said, yeah, no problem. Yes, 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 of course. And then, you know, so he came late. Steve comes late. He comes in. And Prabhupada is there. And then he sort of looks at the plate, prasad, he saved it. And then Prabhupada said, yes, he goes to the back. He brings the plate and he puts it in front of Satsang, of Steve, on the floor. And Steve is thinking in his mind, he thinks, on the floor? On the floor, I'm not a dog. And then he felt so bad. He saw Prabhupada just smiling there and standing there with such a loving smile. Here, this plate I kept for you. And then he felt so bad that he offered his obeisances to Prabhupada for the first time. And he said he could have never done it. He could have never just done it as a matter of etiquette. But he just did it because Prabhupada conquered him. He just conquered him. Conquered him with love. And this is how this movement spread. And Prabhupada conquered so much with love. And then after Prabhupada left, suddenly the movement went into the hands of people 50 years younger who had to lead it. They couldn't do it. They lacked the love. And suddenly it became rules and regulations and standards. You must surrender and you must push. And Prabhupada would always say, thank you so much. I thank you all so much for everything you are doing. He would never forget to thank. But then it was taken for granted, and push and drive and war and burn, and all the goodwill that Prabhupada created was slowly depleted. Yes. But still, Prabhupada stands here like a shining emblem of Krishna's qualities, of all Krishna's good qualities, and especially of that quality of Krishna's love, right? Where he desires to include everyone into these loving exchanges with Krishna. So this is the most wonderful thing. And if we as a community could only emanate that, if we at home could only emanate that, if we to the neighbors could only emanate that, if we at work could only emanate that, wherever we are, if we could only emanate that, then we would make the difference. Then we would certainly make the difference. And of course we can have a meeting and have a discussion about preaching strategies and how we can convince people about Krishna consciousness and different ways of presenting it and so on. But bottom line is, it's love that's going to do it. And nothing else. Okay, Alan, now any questions, any comments?
One comment and one question.
Mm-hmm.
When Krishna was boasting to Lalita Devi that, oh, I am the Srinadev, you know, and my nails killed that demon. My nails are very powerful. And you are also stingy, you don't want me to touch you with my nails. She very calmly and very wittily said to him, oh, my dear boastful Srinadev, why don't you just take your nails and go and scratch the breasts of Chandravali, because we are chaste women here.
Mm.
So we see that it is a wonderful way of looking at the avatars, and is a loving way of expressing our understanding. My question is, living entities want 10,000 part, the tip of a hair. And Krishna, the cosmos, and the creation, everything is so gigantic, so vast. It's very easy for the living entity to become engrossed in his own petty party that, oh, I'm so useless, I'm so small, I'm so insignificant. How in God's name am I actually going to love God?
Mm-hmm. by service, devotional service, because that is the pure transcendental love that descends to us. The Vaishnavas, they bring that service. They are carriers of that service. It said when the Ganga comes into the universe, it comes through a crack from the causal ocean and it comes down. But then the demigods come and they catch it in kumbhas, in pots, and they carry it down. And then, after they've completed the limits of the heavenly regions, then they empty those pots and let the Ganga go again. They became carriers of the mercy. Because they understood that by becoming carriers of that mercy, which is transcendental in itself, we also are becoming transformed and we're becoming part of it. So somehow or other, to connect with some devotional service, it is the mercy of a Vaishnava. We can only get love of God by the mercy of a Vaishnava. It is a Vaishnava who will give us service. We cannot take the service. Well, I'll take the chocolate service. I'll take the marzipan. Okay, no. I'll take, when you're of a certain ethnic background, I'll take the spicy one. So many varieties, choice, taste. No, it is, love of God is a gift. And it's a gift that comes, we make a first connection with that gift by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. The intermediate devotee is described. And it said, Ishvarata Dadine Su Bali Sesu Disatjusa Prima Maite Kripopekshi Yakaruti Samadama. It says, for Ishvara, he has prem. For the Supreme Lord, he has prem, love. But not the love that the Uttamadhikari has. Not the love. Not the loving exchanges that exist between Krishna and Lalita. But still, the intermediate devotee, who is a practitioner, has love. So it is defined. Because that love of God is not an alien emotion. The earlier stage of that love is there in the Madhyam Adhikari. And what is the quality of the Madhyam Adhikari? Sarasabda Vishwaskai Subhidan is Jai. Krishna Bhakti Gaura Sarvakaram Kritahai. He has firm faith in that all benefit will come from devotional service. And therefore he is fully dedicating himself to devotional service. And then, engaging in that devotional service under the directions of the Vaishnavas. And in that way, prakasante mahatmanaha, that prakash, that manifestation of love of God will come. The sadhaka will become prema rurukshu. He will start to approach Krishna prema. Then, either Krishna will automatically from within the heart reveal that Krishna prema, or a great Vaishnava will assist in revealing the full-fledged form of that Krishna prema. Either way, it can manifest. In that way, we can progress. Towards that love. Any other question? Yes.
Thank you, Sri Maharaj. I was wondering, in regards to conquering love in the way that Prabhupada and the spiritual master conquered, like when we have a lot of anattas or conditioning, how can we still continue to conquer love?
With love.
Let's say you get to that level, or how can we get to that way?
I have the same question. When we're filled Prabhupada, he was such an unalloyed devotee. He could do, but how can we do? I'm the same Krishna.
Can you try and
I'm trying. I'm just trying. And sometimes it doesn't work. But I keep on trying. And then I hope that that I'll be able to bind some people with love. That's what I'm trying to do. To the best of my ability. And I hope that in the course, as my love will surely grow for Krishna. That's the nature of this devotional service. There's no doubt about it. And everybody's love will grow as long as we engage in devotional service.
Sorry, Sri Prabhupada said very nicely that you have to forgive yourself for this desire for wealth and fame and so many unnecessary things. Mm-hmm. These things have come with many, many bodies. Mm-hmm. They've traveled along with you through many, many millennia. But simply by serving and ceaselessly chanting the holy name, mm-hmm. eventually Krishna will take them away.
Yeah. And by making others chant that holy name, somehow ceaselessly. And by just, because the holy name, ceaselessly chanting the holy name, done by the Ghosti Anandi, is the spirit of chanting the holy name, either through japa, either through kirtan, either internally, the holy name always reverberating in one's consciousness, and then somehow or other, involving others in the chanting of the holy name. In that way, the Ghosti Anandi is always meditating. How can I increase the chanting of the holy name? My own and the chanting of the world. Anyone else? Okay, then I guess it's time to do some chanting of the holy name. I don't know what is the normal time for the aarti. Is it already time?